We are KPFZ, 88.1 FM, Lakeport, Clear Lake, and all around our beautiful big water, Harbatine. Broadcasting from Konorkatai, Many Woman Mountain, if you're in Clear Lake, or Ha Konor, Big Mountain, if you're in Big Valley. Streaming via kpfz.org, Tacob, Middletown, and the whole wide world. Coming up, Word Weavers. This will be a lightly edited and updated replay of Eugenie Steinman's February 20th interview with LM resident Robert Geary.
KPFZ is grateful for the underwriting support of Angelina's Bakery and Espresso. Angelina's Bakery has a full espresso bar, fresh baked pastries, and a lunch menu with items made from scratch. They also offer ice cream, milkshakes, blended coffees, and Italian sodas. Open weekdays 7 to 3, temporarily closed on weekends.
KPFC thanks Transmission Exchange at 1665 South Main Street, Lakeport, for their support. They have been in business for 39 years. They rebuild and repair transmissions and provide general automotive maintenance. Transmission Exchange is open 8 to 5 Monday through Thursday, Friday from 8 to 4. Their phone number is 263-8152.
To Word Weavers, March 6, 2021. I am Alan Fletcher, and this is normally my Red Hat Rhyme slot. But this week, I am re-presenting a lightly edited and updated edition of Eugenie Steinman's show from February. With the assistance of board operator Herb Gura, she is talking to a special guest, Robert Geary, a member of the LM colony, concerning the indigenous names of places around the lake. They touch on the progress of a new group, Citizens for Healing, in which she, Robert, and I are participants. The overall aim is to foster a healing process between all citizens of Lake County, including newcomers and those whose ancestors have lived here for over 10,000 years. The group's first specific role is investigating the possibility of changing the name of Kelseyville, which continues to honor two evil men and is offensive to those whose ancestors suffered under their depravities. The introductory music was by the Round Valley Feather Dancers.
Well, good evening. Welcome to Word Weavers. Our host this week is Eugenie, and I believe she is
on the phone.
Hi.
Hi. Oh, you know, we have a very special guest. His name is Robert Geary, and he is a member of the ILM Rancheria, and he's a member also of a group called Citizens for Healing. And the purpose of this group is to change the name of Kelseyville to something other than Kelseyville. And we're going to talk about that. And he should be on the line in a minute or two.
Well, this idea about changing the name of Kelseyville has been kicking around for a long time.
Yes, it has. And finally, people have really becoming active about it. And one of the people that I'm so happy that Robert's going to be on the show, because he has so much information, what we did find out because of Robert is that Konocta is only one name for that mountain. There were several names. And he's going to talk about the different names and why they're different and what they mean. And he's also going to tell us definitions of the places and different roads that we see, names like Lupioma, like Konotai. We see these names all over the place, but we have no idea what they mean. He's going to tell us about that also, among many other things. So as soon as he's on...
Well, I think he's on. Robert, is that you on the line?
Yes, it is.
All
okay,
right.
Welcome to KPFZ. Thanks for being here, and I'll let you guys take it away.
Oh, thanks, Herb. Okay, Robert, I was just saying how the group, Citizens for Healing, is concentrating our efforts on how to change the name from Kelseyville to a different name.
First of all, I just wanted to introduce myself. How are you today? My name is Robert Gary, and I'm from Elam. I reside on Elam. I'm a member from Elam, and I just wanted to, say thanks, I guess, for, having me or giving me an opportunity to be on. One of the things, is just, kind of wanted to kind of make it clear, I think, was just knowing that I've heard about this group. I'm not any member or anything else. I'm just a part of this that was asked to sit in and if there were any questions that, that I can help with or even help with direction, that's kind of like my portion, I guess, in this. But as far as anything else, I do totally agree, that, the town should be renamed due to the history and all that goes along, I guess, the name.
Robert, why don't you take a minute and talk about that history? I think most of our listeners have heard about it, but for those who may not have, what's wrong with the name Kelseyville?
Exactly. Why is it important that we change the name?
Well, it's for the fact that, Stone and Kelseyworth were, some of the first settlers that had came to the area, and they enslaved and imprisoned the Native Americans that were, indigenous to the area, used them as far as for labor to go, to mine gold when, the rush happened. Were used as basically workhorses. They were the ones that were doing all the work around, the ranches that were being developed. And then not only that, being abused, physical abuse, sexual abuse, all those kind of things, I think, that were happening from there. And, they were, bringing in their friends, that were, not living in the area, kind of really made life hard, for the Native Americans that were here in the area. So I think with that type of history, I understand, usually what happens is, it's an honor to be named or a place to be named or a road or anything for people that were, a part of the community that did something that was positive, and that wasn't the case,
Yeah.
So that's kind of where it's at.
So when we talked about changing the name, one of the things we decided would be a nice name would be Konotai, because of the mountain being right there. As a matter of fact, if you're in what's now Kelseyville, you can see Konotai right in front of your face.
With a great big K on it.
With a great big K. But after being at a meeting where you had attended, we found out that Konotai is only one of the names for that mountain. And that
Right. Different
areas where different people lived, it was called a different name. Can you tell us about that?
Well, the name Konotai is actually a southeastern Pomo word, which comes from the southeastern Pomo that are located both, at the southern end of the Clear Lake. So you have, Elam, which is a southeastern Pomo village. You got Hoy, which is also in Lower Lake, which is a southeastern Pomo village. And then you also have which used to be there, was a village called Comdup, and they were all southeastern Pomo villages. So the word Konotai, even the pronunciation that we're hearing about it today, is not even the correct pronunciation.
Could you pronounce it in the correct way?
Sure. It's pronounced Konoktai. And so the word Kono means mountain, and Ktai is basically plural for two older women. And from our point, when the southeastern Pomo look at it, you can see two peaks. And so through our stories and through the things that have happened, that's where it comes from. But, my mother is from eastern Pomo. She's from over in Big Valley. And so Kelseyville lies within, you know, the Aboriginal territory of the Big Valley people. And, you know, to me, it would be only right to make sure that they're included as far as asking them, you know, what do they think about, you know, the name? The word Kanaktai is Southeastern Pomo. To me, it wouldn't be right to name a town that's in Eastern Pomo territory a Southeastern name. And right. So, you know, that should go back to the people that are from, you know, from Big Valley. They should be the ones to, first of all, you know, to ask and see even if they want something named in the language. They should be at the table. They should be the ones that are heading, saying, okay, we're the ones that, that want to do this. So, and I don't, and like I said, you know, even though my mother's from Big Valley, I was born and I was raised in LM, and our traditional and cultural values doesn't allow me to cross over into that territory and speak or even, you know, try, attempt to speak, you know, for the people that are from there, you know, to talk to the elders, talk to, you know, the leadership and talk to the people to find out whether or not, you know, if they're interested or what are some of the things that, how would they see it? And that's a traditional value. That's something that, yeah. you know, no one should be discussing or talking about unless, you know, you got the authorization from the people that are indigenous to there.
Yes. So do you think that the different names had to do with the different views? I mean, when I was driving around recently with knowing about this, I realized that the mountain looks totally different from different points of view.
Right, right. Well, coming from an east southeastern point of view, you know, when we look at it, we see two peaks. And so from the stories and the things that come from our territories and our people, that's where you get the two old mountain women. You go over to the other side, and you, one peak is behind the other peak. You don't see it. And
right.
so it's a different name, you know.
Right, exactly. And, of course, in those days, people were not driving around the mountains saying, oh, look,
right.
there's Kanaktai. Oh, look, you know, it wasn't,
right.
oh, look, there's Kanaktai.
Right.
It was
right.
it was just what they saw where they happened to live.
Right, right.
Right.
And so, you know, it would be proper, even going back to the cultural and traditional values, that that would come from the people that are from there. You know, I got, you know, relatives, you know, that are all from there that, you know, they should be the ones that are, you know, at the table discussing and talking about what, you know, what they're comfortable with. And who
right.
knows, maybe they might not be, you know, who knows? I mean, that, but I think when, you know, that's kind of one of the problems I think today is that, you know, we all are looked at as Indians and we're blanketed and not understanding and realizing that, you know,
exactly.
from down here in southeastern Pomo to eastern Pomo, you know, it's a different. And then all the different villages that that lie within those Aboriginal territories, you know, there might be slightly things that are different within those. You know, even the language might change a little bit from
yes.
one place to another. You
know, and
you
what
have,
about, yeah, the language now. Is there a unified language, though, or is it totally different?
No, it's different. They, you know, the linguists say that, you know, all Pomo languages, they're not different dialects. They're actually different languages, just for the fact that, you know, usually what makes a dialect is when there are so many words that are compatible. But because they're so different, that's the thing that makes it a different language. Now, you see Pomo from here all the way out to the coast. You got coastal Pomo, you got valley Pomo, which is in kind of the Ukiah Valley there, and then you come over the lake and you got Lake Pomo.
Right.
And all of us, you know, all of us are, you know, there's, you know, we're all a part of a people, but even the word Pomo got put on us, that wasn't really anything that comes from us. That was brought on by an anthropologist that called us that. But that doesn't, that's not what we call ourselves.
So the word Pomo, I was told that it meant people. Is that true?
No, that's not true.
Oh, it's so good to talk to you and find these things.
Right. The word Pomo is actually two words put together, and it was put together by an anthropologist a long time ago.
Oh.
There used to be magnesite. A magnesite bead was really high in value. It was something that they later on referred to as Pomo gold. And so they would go and they would mine it. And there was this place where that it, they would mine this and they would make these into this, these beads. Po is actually the name of magnesite. That's the word for magnesite. Mo is the cave where we used to get it from. And so that's how the word Pomo actually came to life. But down here, like, I wouldn't call myself Pomo. I would call myself Umtimpo or Mofo. Mofo means people. Umtimpo means Indian people, native people.
I see.
So Pomo wasn't, Pomo's a place where you got this bead. It's not, doesn't mean people.
I see. Oh, thank you so much. I mean, it's so enlightening to speak mm-hmm. to you. And what about the word Kanakdai itself? What is the meaning of that?
Well, I think I explained it earlier, but from the southeastern Pomo, Kanakdai, the pronunciation is Kanokatai, and Kano means mountain, and Katai is the word for, it's a word for an older woman, but plural, more than one older woman.
Oh.
So each peak that you can see from my shoreline is a woman. And so that's where they basically, when you want to translate it, it comes out to the two old mountain women, mm-hmm. or the old mountain women, plural.
How interesting. Mm-hmm. And what about, I hear the word, and I know there's even a street called Lupioma.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Lupioma word, it's not even a Pomo. It's not a Pomo language. It's
actually it isn't. No,
it's something that is more towards like Lake Miwok language.
Oh, I see.
They were close, and there was a lot of intermarriages. There was a lot of intermarrying between the tribes, the different tribes that were around the lake. And so you had even over the hill into, what is that, Spring Valley or Long Valley? I mean,
yes.
You had the Putnam that were over there. So the Pomo people were intermarrying with Lake Miwok. They seasonally, you'd have Wapo that would come to the lake. Mm-hmm. And then you also had, the Putnam that was just right over the hill, and those intermarriages happened. Mm-hmm.
So in your opinion, with your knowledge, what do you think would be an appropriate name to change the name of Kayville to?
It depends. It depends on if you're talking about a native name. If you're talking about a native name, that could only come from the people from Big Valley or the people that are in that area, Eastern Pomo people. Talking about a name change, from Kelseyville to, I don't know, Robertville. I don't know. I'm just
out.
If you throw out something, then it'd have to, I think it's an honor, for something like that to be named after you. But I think, kind of depending on, what the name is or who it's named after or whatever, what have they done for the community? What have they done for, the place? And so, the thing is I think for everyone to understand and realize is that, a lot of the names I see that are splashed around, it'd be nice to see our names, our the Pomo words, around the lake in the areas, and given by the tribes, it would be beautiful to see. There's some streets that are down here that are, I've seen over in Clear Lake called Cabell, which is our language, Kanakdai, which is, it's good, for the fact that it's down in the right territory where it should be. But then yet, has its native communities where they consulted about it. And I think that's the big thing. That's the big issue. It's just, they need to be a part of this process instead of, somebody getting an idea and kind of go, oh, well, hey, this is what it is.
Yes.
And I think that's been my job. Like I said, even just sitting at the table in this organization, with this organization, like I said, I'm not there to say, hey, you should name it this, or hey, it shouldn't be this, or or anything else. But to be able to help, I think with the knowledge, luckily that I've gained along the years, and be able to kind of put it in a perspective where it's done respectfully, and I think that's just I think what my portion is here.
Yeah.
So like I said, Lupioma, I don't think would be a it would be an appropriate, word for that area. I don't think Kanakdai would be an appropriate word for that area because that's not our territory. So, there's a lot of old villages that used to be located close to there, but, that'd be something, like I said, that would have to come from, you know, the Eastern Pomo and Big Valley.
Yeah, I see. So you feel that the name of the mountain that Big Valley would refer to it as would be the native name that should be used?
For the name of Kelseyville? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Or just the name of the mountain?
The name of, well, no, the name of the town.
Yeah, like I said, I'm not going to be the person to say, well, this is what it should or what it shouldn't.
Right, I understand, but
I'm sticking to my values. But I think, you know, from things that my elder, my uncle had told me, they would just call that, you know, Denobitan, which just means big mountain. That was the word for, you know, Canoctai on that side, their view, you know, how they saw it. And so that was just how it was.
Yeah.
But even the word for Clear Lake was, you know, really universal. I mean, the whole lake, all of us called it Hobbiton, you know, and that just means big water. So.
Yes. Well, it's really interesting because it's so mind-opening to hear all these different names and words and the way we understood it was not the way it was at all. So thank you so much for telling us all these things.
Yeah.
Another thing I was interested in were the different creation stories. I noticed just from reading a little bit about the creation stories of the local natives, there were many different creation stories.
Yeah, and like I said, I think that's what we all have to kind of keep in mind. Basically, from an anthropological look at the lake, it's one big archaeological site. If you take a look at some of the oldest maps from Alfred Kroeber around the lake, there's basically almost like an outline of the lake of villages that were right on the lake. It was a huge resource. It was a way they gave you money. It was a way that gave you food. It gave you water. It sustained life. It was a major thing. So I think that's one of the things that we have to remember, that, you know, there's so much that's happening, I think, within the county, that we have to really kind of step back and realize that this lake is, you know, one of the oldest lakes, I think, in the nation. I've seen on an anthropological report. But if that's the case, then, you know, the dynamics, I think, of the lake itself is just, it's important to know that with all the development and everything else that's going on, we're basically destroying resources if we don't take it serious because of how inundated, you know, with the villages that were around the lake.
Yes. So are these villages, do you feel they're still incorporated with different people with different names and different points of view?
Oh, yeah. I'm pretty sure they've all, I mean, every village would probably have something that made it its own village. I mean, you know, whether it was through, you know, the creation stories that they have, or even the little, you know, minor changes in language, you know. So those are the things that we have to, I think, keep in mind when we're talking about issues like this. You know, sometimes I see that, you know, it seems like as long as you get one native to the table, that native can basically speak for everyone. We're always blanketed as long as you got the token Indian at the table, and that way of looking at it needs to stop because we're all individual nations and need to understand and respect that. And so that's the reason why, like, I wouldn't cross over into Eastern Pomo territory because of where I was raised and because, you know, where I'm owned from. Like, even my language tells you, okay, well, when I say Lembuk, that means that the land of Elem owns me, and that's an ownership that can't be taken away. Regardless,
you are listening to KPFC Word Weavers. Eugenie Steinman and Herb Gura are having a fascinating talk with Robert Geary, a member of the LM colony, concerning the indigenous names of places round the lake. They touch on the progress of a new group, Citizens for Healing, who are investigating the possibility of renaming Kelseyville to the satisfaction of residents and of the descendants of the Hintal people who lived there for at least 10,000 years. Before part two, here are the Round Valley Feather Dancers.
You may or may not know the answer to this, but can you tell us what that area that's now called Kelseyville was like before Kelsey and Stone showed up here? What life was like on that land back before white people showed up?
Well, I can just say the stories that I heard and the things that were passed down to me from, the natives that were around here, or the natives that were, that those stories were passed down to. But, you got to look at the geography of the area. You got a huge lake, natural lake, water, and what comes with that? It sustains life. It has fish, it has birds, it has everything that you need. And so it was plentiful. And, the tribes that were here in the area flourished for the fact that, the resources here were rich. So, when we started getting to the point where, new settlers were coming in and they were cutting us off from gathering areas and cutting us off from being able to go and get the foods and the things and the medicines that we needed, that's when things started changing. And so before contact, we knew our environment. We knew, how to make our houses. We knew where to go for fish, or we knew where to go for food seasonally. What was good over here, what was good over there, and that type of knowledge.
Yeah.
So I think those are the things that that really changed our environment when we were being cut off.
Do you know how many people lived here back then?
No. I did take some statistics, and I know they were saying, even just throughout, and I'm just talking about it as a whole, that, they were saying, the state of California were in the millions, I think, when it came to Native Americans. And by the turn of the 1900s, we were reduced down to 16,000. So, and mind you, first contact was in 1833 here in Lake County.
Yeah.
So in that short of time, that's how many people were being lost due to, starvation, due to, killing and slavery, and then, the diseases and, just everything that came on with the new settlers, things that we didn't have in our environment. So,
right. And all of a sudden, there were shortages. In other words, this was an incredible gathering ground. In fact, it probably still is an incredible gathering ground if you had to, And having that cut off so that, you can't go collect acorns there anymore or whatever,
right.
All these
right.
different things that were so, right. they were so prevalent.
Right.
There was no problem getting food or other supplies.
Right.
I mean,
not only that, even just some of the things that were introduced by the settlers that were coming in over the years. I mean, you think about all the fish that were actually brought in, to basically kind of make sure that, this is kind of a vacation area, a vacation spot.
Right,
just
right.
To remember, other types of species of fish were brought in. We used to get, the hitch and the chai by the bushels, we used to get those, and that's what used to sustain us all the time. But with this introduced species, they were eating off, and now you know you can hardly see any.
Isn't it amazing?
Yeah.
Really. Well, I am kind of familiar with ILM. I was a long time ago. I took a basket weaving class over there, and I was friendly. I don't know if you ever knew Priscilla or.
Yeah,
she was a beautiful lady, and I used to go and visit her at times. She used to have these great big dinner parties, and I went to this big celebration that they had at Anderson Morse, and everybody from LM seemed to be there, and they were celebrating a dream. Somebody had a very positive dream, and they and this whole party was to celebrate the dream. And we just happened, my husband and I, who was an arrowhead, he was an arrowhead maker, we happened to be invited to this big party, and we don't know, we never did know what the dream was about, but all we did know was it was positive.
And
I know that
I,
that the culture was considered a dream culture. Does that mean anything to you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, you know, things have, you know, our culture has changed. I mean, from the old time, we have ceremonies that, you know, come from the old ceremonies before the dream culture, as you call it. But, and then things had happened to change. After the settlement, or after the new settlers had came in, because our people were dying off in big numbers, you know, our culture changed to the point to where, you know, there was this dream society that started seeing things that were going to help the people. And so it was a new type of religion. And so those are the things that, you know, we're lucky because, you know, we still have those things that are happening, that happen today. And, you know, we're a part of those. And a lot of people, I don't think that they realize that a lot of those old ways, I think, you know, because they don't see us out there and doing what we normally do, those things are still being done today. And in the communities that, you know, keep those going, you know, it's really important for, you know, the Indian people, the Native people to know and then to continue, you know, those ways, because that's what ties us. That's what ties us to the land. That's what ties us to our ancestors. That's what ties us to, you know, everything that's around us. And, you know, I believe that that's kind of why we're still here today.
Yes. When I was, a few years ago, I was instrumental in creating Native Pomo, we called them Pomo villages, where I would lead a project with the local school kids, and we would build tule houses. And I come from New York originally, and I was taught, you know, oh, well, Native Americans, they lived in teepees, right?
Yeah.
And teepees were made out of buffalo skins. Well, it never occurred to me until I got here that, hey, there's no buffalo, you know. They use tule. So, you know, just learning that, you know, how the different areas are dictate what the structures are made out of, you know, was something that was surprising to me, even though it seemed so obvious.
Yeah. And, you know, I think, like, even just hearing the stories like that, I think that's why it's important to make sure that, you know, the people that are doing those are Native people. A lot of people don't realize and understand that, you know, there's our way of life and the way that we did things where we were always in tune, not with just the physical, but the spiritual. And I think the thing to remember is, like, you know, there's some times where, you know, men couldn't do things. There's some times where women couldn't do things. There's times where if you were to build a house, you had to be in a certain way. There's just a lot of rules that go along with it. It's not just going and saying, okay, well, hey, I'm going to go hunting today. And I, you know, well, if there's certain times that you can't hunt, then basically, you know, the village took care of you. Or if there's certain times that, you know, you couldn't make a house, then, you know, your village built you a house. And I think that's one of the things that we is really overlooked, is that the values that, you know, we have as Native Americans in our community, there's also structure on how things are done, the way things are done. Not just that they're done, but there's a way to get there. There's a process to get there. And, you know, it's important to, you know, not leave that out, you know, so.
Yes.
You're listening to KPFC 88.1 FM, all volunteer non-commercial radio for Lake County and beyond. This is the Word Weavers Show with Eugenie Steinman, and we're talking about, well, we started out talking about renaming the town of Kelseyville to a more traditional Native American name, and we've kind of drifted off into talking about Native American life.
Yes.
Please go on.
Thank you so much, Herb. Yes. Well, one of the things I learned, I had a great teacher. His name was Bill Tony, and I don't know if you have heard of him.
Yeah.
Robert.
I remember him.
Yeah, and he would stress the different things that were available to the people in those days, and he would always say they had seven grades of sandpaper. That was one of the things he would, you know, that would amaze everybody.
Yeah,
It was true, you know, and they had different types of hair conditioner made from the wild lilacs that grow all over still to this day. You can see wild lilacs. And all the different things that were available to these people that were so sophisticated. They had, that's the word I think, it was, they were so sophisticated because they had so many products at their disposal.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, it's funny because, you know, we look at primitive times, as we said, as not like really having much, right? That you just kind of did with what you had. And that's not true. You know, I think with being connected to your environment and what you had and how to use things, I think, you know, it unlocks the possibilities of what's around you. And so, you know, you're in a place for, you know, thousands and thousands of years, and you know, you get to learn some things. You know, you get to learn, you know, where you're at, and you know what you can and can't use, and you know those kind of things. And I think that, you know, that's why Clear Lake, you know, that just the communities around Clear Lake, you know, pre-contact, that's why they flourished. You know, there were so many resources that were here that, you know, we really flourished. You know, not only just by the things that, you know, we're putting, you know, like we talk about, you know, that, you know, we had the lake, we had the water, you know, we have all the animals, but you go right over, you know, over the hill here, and there was obsidian.
Mm-hmm.
Obsidian was huge. You know, that was something that was a part of the economy. We used it for trade to be able to get other things from over in the valley or out at the coast. So, you know, it was big for us. And so you can literally go back and start to work your way, you know, to the Midwest and find borax obsidian just because it traded that far.
Yes. And they say, you know, they say that, I've heard rather, that they would walk over the mountains to the coast.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have horses. They walked. Am I correct?
Right.
And they
there were trails that the Indians used.
Trails.
They knew how to travel. What was the best way to get from one place to another without walking all over the place and making it twice as long? So there were trails that, you know, different tribes even, you know, at one point or at some point would be able to use, making sure that, you know, that those things were traded. You go from one place to another place to trade goods and get what you didn't have in your area, vice versa. And so, you know, those things were always, you know, always taught, always learned. A lot of people don't realize or never really heard about, like, the runners. You used to have people that used to run messages. Some of them, the old timers, you know, they have marathons, and they talk about, like, some of the Indian boys that would actually, you know, win these races, and it was because they were already doing it. They've been doing it. And so, you know, it's just, you know, there was a connection. And it didn't happen with just the pomo. I mean, all of us, we all use these trade routes in order to trade for things that, you know, that we didn't have in our territory.
Yes. And the things that they brought back, like, they br- brought back the shells, if I'm not mistaken, were used for money. Is that true?
Yeah. Well, there were, like I said, there were a lot of different things that were used, but you know, you did have, you know, the shells that were used for money. Like I said, even the rock, you know, the magnesite rock, it was made into a bead and was used as money. And so there was a certain accounting system that was only used, you know, for those kind of things. That way you can get you can get to a higher amount faster using certain things, a certain accounting system. So
right.
Pretty complex, you know, for
I'm sure,
you know, primitive
yes.
people.
And one of the things we had here, and I suppose it was tradable, was the kind of rock we had, like the like bottle rock
mm-hmm.
or obsidian.
Mm-hmm.
And
you know,
I know people made arrowheads out of that, and I wonder
mm-hmm.
if that was traded to places where they didn't have arrowhead making materials.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean you can go to, you know, places that are out of our county, and some of those places, the only way that you find obsidian in those places, they got there through trade. They traditionally didn't have obsidian. So even if you see a flake, depending on what areas you're at, if you see a flake on the ground, you would know that, hey, that got there through trade.
Somebody brought that there, in other words.
Right, somebody brought that there. That
somebody
indigenous.
Brought that, yes.
Mm-hmm.
It's intriguing, all the different clues there are to the life that people led at that time.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's interesting because I know, at least I learned that one of the basic foods was made from acorns.
Mm-hmm.
And still today, if you had to, you could live on acorns,
mm-hmm.
or at least it could be part of your diet like it was then.
Yeah.
And
everything that's here, that's around us, is still usable, you know?
Yes, and it's still the same. I mean, it hasn't changed that much as far as the natural food supply goes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's still used, you know, and it's, you know, one of those things that, like I said, you know, that just the area itself, there's a lot that I don't think a lot of people realize, you know, really what's on their shoreline or even in the lands that are around them. The communities and the villages couldn't strive like they did, you know, if it was bare.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the unfortunate thing is with all the cultivation and everything else that you know, the pioneers and settlers brought in, you know, we kind of lost a lot of that,
yeah.
You know, but there's still seed beds that are under there. And if you let it go back to it, you know, those things will come to light again.
Mm-hmm. Having you on Word Weavers is really so beneficial to the people who are listening. And it's bringing our community, it's enlightening our community is exactly what's happening, because our community is consistent of everybody. It consists of all the natives and all the people who've come here who aren't natives, but it's still one community. And because you're participating in our show today, you have opened the mind of all the people who are listening, and even those who will hear about the show. Maybe they didn't listen, but somebody may say, hey, it was really interesting, you know, I heard this and that. So the word is getting out, and we're learning things about the community that we never would have known before. And
mm-hmm.
I thank you so much for all your information.
So, you know, for these many years that people have been trying to change the name of that town, there's always been some resistance, in fact, enough resistance to keep it from happening up to this point. And I wonder if we could talk a little bit about that, about the politics around this and what it's actually going to take to get people to change the name of a town that's named after some really bad people.
You know,
yeah, that's what we're trying to do, and it's a good question. What would you say about that, Robert?
You know, I think, you know, we have to understand where we're at today. The important thing is, and I get it, you know, there are a lot of people that, whether they went to Kelseyville, graduated from Kelseyville residents or whatever, and that's all that they knew it as. And I think you know, we really have to put things and be honest and truthful for what had happened. And I think those are the things to remember. None of us had made that happen back then, but it happened. And we have to come to terms with it, and we have to understand it. And I don't think any of us are responsible for that history. But it exists. And so I think that, you know, we're in a day and age now where, you know, maybe we don't agree with, you know, with what they did or how they did it. But, you know, we can come together to be able to find out, like, what can we do to make this better? And what can we do to fix the situation? I think that's the biggest thing. As a community, we need to do that. We need to acknowledge each other and know that, you know, hey, you know, the Pomo people were here, you know, for a long time. You know, they, this was their place, and, you know, this is their home and this is their land. And, no, I don't think anybody's, you know, as far as from the Native community, is wanting anybody today to be responsible for what happened a long time ago. But then, you know, but on the other side, we do have the ability to fix it. And so I think that's where we're at today. And so I don't think, like I said, I don't think it's anybody's fault or, you know, anybody possesses that reason of, you know, why that was done. But today we can fix it. And so I think it's just respecting each other, acknowledging each other, and moving forward. And so I hope that, you know, that this could be a way to start it. You know, this can be a way to happen.
Yes. So in other words, changing the name isn't the utmost most important, but it's accepting each other.
Yeah, I mean, it's accepting each other. But I think, you know, even with the changing the name, no, I believe this is me. And like I said, I'm not going to be the person to sit there and say, well, you need to change it to this. But I think, you know, for it to be right, because it is a scar, you know, to the Indian, to the Native people that are in the area because of what it did to our history. And yes, to know that, okay, well, I think it was really, you know, at one point it was shameful because it was called the Kelseyville Indian. You know, that was, you know, even worse, you know, because you associated the Native community along with these people that did these to the Native community.
Right.
And you combined them. So, you know, I think it should be changed. But to what? You know, like I said, that's not, you know, the territory that I can speak for, but I think the people that can should be at the table, too.
Uh-huh. So we just have to invite more people to the table to discuss it, and we have to get the different little cultures that have different names to come together and to decide what they think would be appropriate.
You're asking me?
I'm kind of suggesting, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
How many people attend these meetings?
I have, well, you know, we've been Zooming lately, and I'm not sure. I think there's, how many would you say, Robert? Maybe 15 to 20?
Yeah, about that.
And it's mostly white people?
I think mostly, but we have had Native people there also.
And that was one of the things, like I said, that the, you know, some of the for me to be there, you know, I think I was just there because, you know, somebody had asked me to sit in and ask what I thought about it. And for me, it's just, you know, whatever I can do to help facilitate, I think that communication to, you know, the tribal people that it should be, that's all I'm there for, mm-hmm. You know, and to make sure that they have a say.
Well, that's very, very considerate and very important. And I'm so glad you're here on our show to mm-hmm. help us understand the tribal people. And maybe if they're listening, they can understand how curious we are and how willing we are to take any input we can get, you know, right. From you or any of the tribal people. And having you on the show, because we all share one community, and right. Your participation really helps us to all come together in peace and love and in understanding. And right. There's so much that we need to learn, and you're helping us so much, Robert. We sure appreciate it.
So, Robert, amongst the people in your community, the Ilem people, do you guys ever talk about this? About this effort that's being made and the people who seem to be leading it, and I'm just wondering, is it something that's of concern to the people of Elim? How do they feel about the way the process is working?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, first of all, you know, as far as, you know, with us that are down here, and I'm not going to, you know, traditionally, I'm not going to speak for anybody to see how they feel, but I think we all know from down here that, you know, that, because we were there, I think, as far as the fight when, you know, it first started happening with the school. And all of us, you know, are, you know, there were people that were from down here that, you know, went to those meetings. I went to those meetings and, you know, said how I felt and where I was at with it. But all in all, you know, we all respect, because most of our, like our grandmothers or our mothers, you know, come from Big Valley. And so out of respect, you know, we support them in everything that happens with it. But as far as the politics and how it goes, you know, honestly, all politics for me is just, it's not a good thing. It just divides and pulls us apart, you know. But, you know, I'm for, like I said, you know, renaming whatever, you know, whatever it's meant to be, as long as it's for a good reason and, you know, whatever the name is positive. And I think, you know, everybody that's down here is looking kind of for the same thing. We all want the same thing. And I think, you know, one of the things is that we have to understand that, you know, on that side of the lake, I mean, you have, you know, you got Big Valley, you have Scotts Valley, you have Upper Lake, you got Robinson. You know, these are all Eastern Pomo people, Eastern Pomo community. And I think one of the things to remember is that, you know, they're not small cultural communities, that these are nations that are here, that are still here. And, yes, you know, all of us have to be at the table, or all of us need to be given that opportunity to speak and be a part of any process, you know, because of, you know, our history here.
That was the Round Valley Feather Dancers performing a hummingbird dance. In non-COVID times, they appear frequently around Clear Lake. I last saw them at the Bloody Island Healing Ceremony 2 years ago. I'll have to go check my calendar. The healing ceremony might happen again this year if enough of us get vaccinated. Thank you, Robert Geary, Eugene Steinman, and Hope Gura, for a fascinating look at the names, languages, and culture of Hintel villages around the lake. The group we've been talking about, Citizens for Healing, is looking into the possibility of renaming Kelseyville, which is named after two evil brothers. At the moment, we are researching the procedures involved. The most likely route is a county-wide initiative. But we're just starting to get key players to come to our table, as Richard Geary put it. Tribal representatives and businessmen, particularly those with the K-word in their business names, are most welcome to participate. We are still in the very early stages of organization. In fact, we don't even have an official chairman, but Dallas Cook has stepped up to organize meetings, and Cat heard the rest of us. Speaking of cats, it crossed my mind that the naming of towns might be similar to the naming of cats.
The naming of cats. The naming of cats is a difficult matter. It isn't just one of your holiday games. You may think at first I'm as mad as a hatter when I tell you A cat must have three different names. First of all, there's the name that the family use daily, such as Peter, Augustus, Alonzo, or James. Such as Victor or Jonathan, George or Bill Bailey. All of them sensible, everyday names. There are fancier names if you think they sound sweeter. Some for the gentlemen, some for the dames. Such as Plato, Admetus, Electra, Demeter. But all of them sensible, everyday names. But I tell you, a cat needs a name that's particular, a name that's peculiar and more dignified. Else how can he keep up his tail perpendicular, or spread out his whiskers, or cherish his pride? Of names of this kind, I can give you a quorum, such as Monkestrap, Quaxo, or Coricopat, such as Bombaliorina, or else Jellylorum, names that never belong to more than one cat. But above and beyond, there's still one name left over, and that is the name that you never will guess, the name that no human research can discover, but the cat himself knows and will never confess. When you notice a cat in profound meditation, the reason, I tell you, is always the same. His mind is engaged in a rapt contemplation of the thought of the thought of the thought of his name. His ineffable, effable, effin' ineffable, deep and inscrutable, singular name.
Perhaps that's the answer. Remove the old name and don't replace it. That would be very ineffable. I'm Alan Fletcher, and I just put together this edited version on KPFC Word Weavers. For more information about Citizens for Healing, go to the new website, c4h.club. Yes, c4h.club, c4h.club. You can join our mailing list, and then you'll be told how to go to our Zoom meetings. Thanks to all of you, and we'll go out again with a little more of the Round Valley Feather Dancers.